Old Mortality by Walter Scott. Volume 1, Chapter 1. Most readers, says the manuscript of Mr. Pattison, must have witnessed with delight the joyous burst which attends the dismissing of a village school on a fine summer evening. The buoyant spirit of childhood, repressed with so much difficulty during the tedious hours of discipline, may then be seen to explode, as it were, in shout and song and frolic, as the little urchins join in groups on their playground and arrange their matches of sport for the evening. But there is one individual who partakes of the relief afforded by the moment of dismission, whose feelings are not so obvious to the eye of the spectator, or so apt to receive his sympathy. I mean the teacher himself, who, stunned with the hum and suffocated with the closeness of his schoolroom, has spent the whole day, himself against a host, in controlling petulance, exciting indifference to action, striving to enlighten stupidity, and laboring to soften obstinacy, and whose very powers of intellect have been confounded by hearing the same dull lesson repeated 100 times by rote, and only varied by the various blunders of the reciters. Even the flowers of classic genius, with which his solitary fancy is most gratified, have been rendered degraded, in his imagination, by their connection with tears, with errors, and with punishment, so that the eclogues of Virgil and odes of Horace are each inseparably allied in association with the sullen figure and monotonous recitation of some blubbering schoolboy. If to these mental distresses are added a delicate frame of body and a mind ambitious of some higher distinction than that of being the tyrant of childhood, the reader may have some slight conception of the relief which a solitary walk, in the cool of a fine summer evening, affords to the head which has ached, and the nerves which have been shattered, for so many hours, implying the irksome task of public instruction. To me these evening strolls have been the happiest hours of an unhappy life, and if any gentle reader shall hereafter find pleasure in perusing these lucubrations, I am not unwilling he should know that the plan of them has been usually traced in those moments, when relief from toil and clamor, combined with the quiet scenery around me, has disposed my mind to the task of composition. My chief haunt, in these hours of golden leisure, is the banks of the small stream, which, winding through a lone vale of green bracken, passes in front of the village schoolhouse of Ganderclough. For the first quarter of a mile, perhaps, I may be disturbed from my meditations, in order to return the scrape, or doffed bonnet, of such stragglers among my pupils as fish for trouts or minnows in the little brook, or seek rushes and wildflowers by its margin. But beyond the space I have mentioned, the juvenile anglers do not, after sunset, voluntarily extend their excursions. The cause is that farther up the narrow valley, and in a recess which seems scooped out of the side of the steep heathy bank, there is a deserted burial ground, which the little cowards are fearful of approaching in the twilight. To me, however, the place has an inexpressible charm. It has been long the favorite termination of my walks, and, if my kind patron forgets not his promise, will, and probably at no very distant day, be my final resting place after my mortal pilgrimage. Note, by Mr. Jedediah Claishbatham, that I kept my plight in this melancholy matter with my deceased and lamented friend, appeareth from a handsome headstone, erected at my proper charges in this spot, bearing the name and calling of Peter Pattison, with the date of his nativity and sepulture, together also with a testimony of his merits, attested by myself, as his superior and patron, J. C. It is a spot which possesses all the solemnity of feeling attached to a burial ground, without exciting those of a more unpleasing description. Having been very little used for many years, the few hillocks which rise above the level plain are covered with the same short velvet turf. The monuments, of which there are not above 7 or 8, are half sunk in the ground and overgrown with moss. No newly erected tomb disturbs the sober serenity of our reflections by reminding us of recent calamity, and no rank springing grass forces upon our imagination the recollection that it owes its dark luxuriance to the foul and festering remnants of mortality which ferment beneath. The daisy which sprinkles the sod, and the harebell which hangs over it, derive their pure nourishment from the dew of heaven, and their growth impresses us with no degrading or disgusting recollections. Death has indeed been here, and its traces are before us, but they are softened and deprived of their horror by our distance from the period when they have been first impressed. Those who sleep beneath are only connected with us by the reflection that they have once been what we now are, and that, as their relics are now identified with their Mother Earth, our